The Chinese Premier Li Keqiang visited Australia last week and is currently in New Zealand. The talks were primarily focused on expanding on the Australia-China Free Trade Agreement signed last year, and this year includes a major beef export deal and more opportunities for higher education between the two nations. So what has Premier Li achieved, and does his visit bring more economic positivity or more political instability? Joining me in studio today is Professor James Lawrenson. He is the Deputy Director of the Australia-China Relations Institute, a project of the 2SER part-owner University of Technology, Sydney. Professor Lawrenson, welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
The major priority of this trip, as we've just said in the opening, was to develop upon the China-Australia FTA and to potentially talk other agreements. I know there's talk about doing an Asia-Pacific FTA that China's wanting to do. Do you think Li's visit achieved economic importance, or was it just another ineffective group chat?
No, look, definitely some real gains. Let me give you one example. So the Australia-China Free Trade Agreement, signed at the end of 2015, did a very good job of cutting tariffs. But one thing that was mainly left out were what economists call non-tariff barriers, or other barriers that prevent trade. So, for example, in the area of beef. Previously, Australia was only able to export beef from certain processing facilities that had been approved by the Chinese government. Now, there weren't many of them. So, in other words, it was a bottleneck. Now, one thing that Premier Li's visit did was to dramatically increase the number of processing facilities that Australia could sell beef to China through. Look, that's estimated to be worth $400 million a year. That's not a small number.
That's a very impressive start, I would think. Well, let's keep on the beef idea here. And Li's visit did talk that major beef export deal. Good news that we're expanding that. I think there was also talk of a China-Australia Science and Research Fund and greater Chinese help in building Australian infrastructure. That was the Belt and Road Initiative. Why would Li be particularly targeting investment in these areas?
Yeah, China looks upon Australia as a very important supplier of some pretty key inputs. Iron ore is the obvious one. 80% of China's iron ore consumption is now satisfied through imports, and Australia provides 65% of that. So that's a basic building block that China needs for its industrialization. And increasingly, we're looking at China seeing Australia as a key supplier of food, agricultural products. So that's why we're seeing more and more Chinese companies investing in Australia's agricultural sector as well.
You think along that line there with the iron ore and the agricultural product story, do you think that in a way lessens the claim that that China doesn't need Australia, that we need China more? Do you think that's levelling out a little more now?
Oh, I do. Let's not also forget, we actually run a massive trade surplus with China. China buys $20 billion more from us than we buy from them. So there's certainly keen Chinese interest. Australia's obviously much smaller than China, but we supply very important things that China needs, and I don't imagine that's going to change. In fact, I imagine it to even grow in the future.
Well, I want to touch on what Premier Li was saying about lowering the market access threshold. It's for Australian businesses, I think. What does that mean? And do you think that because he's now lowered this market access threshold, do you think that there might be even more bargaining plans to come with it in the future, that there might be an offset plan he must have to come back?
Oh, look, I think you're right. I see the cooperation between Australia and China as growing and broadening each year. 10 years ago, what Australia mainly exported to China was iron ore. Now, that's fine, that's good. But now, increasingly, we're seeing Australia export agricultural products, services as well, tourism and education, obviously. But look, also things like financial services, legal services, architectural design services. So all of these things are starting to become very important for the Australia-China relationship. And the lower those access barriers are, well, the benefits we get. You know, the OECD predicts that by 2030, there will be 850 million more Chinese in the middle class. In Europe, they say there'll only be 16 million more, right? So you can pretty clearly see where the opportunities are. It's a good story for Australia.
Actually, talking about that Chinese middle class, do you think that'll even enhance Australian manufacturing or even other Australian industries, that this Chinese middle class is now so strong and has such a strong appetite, they might even reach out to Australia?
Oh, I do. I think it's going to be quite profound. And I don't think we've quite got it in our head at the moment just how profound it will be. Services, for example, our services exports to China last year went up by 21%. Now, China was already the biggest market for our services, so it's the biggest market and it's the fastest growing. It's pretty rare that you get those two things together, but such is the size of China's middle class. That's the sort of outcomes that we can have. It's a good story. Now, look, when we're talking about exporting agricultural and services products to China, it's not going to be a free ride, okay? It was easy in the case of iron ore because we can dig up iron ore and ship it cheaper than anyone else. Agriculture, services, there's a whole lot more competition. So it's not automatic. Things are going well. The demand is there. We're going to have to be smart.
Do you think Australia could potentially have what it takes to get more competitive in comparison to even the US and Europe?
Look, I do. And as I said, last year our services exports went up by 21%. So that, I think, shows that we're doing pretty well. But let me give you an example of an industry where we think we're doing well. And we are, but we're not perhaps doing as well as we could be. Tourism. There was a lot of talk about how last year Australia got more than 1 million Chinese tourists. That actually accounts for about 1% of total outbound Chinese tourism. So we've got a 1% share of the market. And in fact, that share has been declining over the last decade. So, again, the potential's there. We're doing okay, but could we do better? Probably.
I tell you something, even with tourism and agriculture, even talking about iron ore, talking about the death of the mining boom as such, all these talks about open trade are going to make Trump very unhappy, which is the subject of the last question, which no doubt a state visit always comes with strong messages in favour of globalisation and trade cooperation. Premier Li, President Xi is very aggressive on the open trade and globalisation story. But yet, these kinds of stories to do with trade cooperation and globalisation have also brought about some sources of concern with the rapid economic development, and now that's being reinvested into military status. And also, there's a concern that money is not being helped to their international poverty and their own corruption crisis, admittedly, in China. Is this just news fodder for protectionism advocates or even anti-Chinese audiences everywhere?
No, look, I think there are some areas that China really could improve on. China makes it quite difficult for foreign investors to invest in China, particularly in the services sector. Now, China says it welcomes foreign investment in manufacturing. Well, fine, but it's done that for quite some time now. The services sector is still relatively closed. Now, the services sector in China...
This is this market access threshold story.
Correct, yeah. Except now we're talking about investment, not trade. So the services sector in China has actually grown to become the biggest part of China's economy, worth 52% of GDP last year. This is where all the exciting opportunities are. And yet, at the same time, China actually makes it pretty tough for foreign investors to invest in that country. So, look, China's growth and development, I think, is fundamentally a good story. But China could actually help itself a bit more as well if it backed its narrative with concrete policy actions.